down Shah Jahan, an orange light appeared and grew brighter. I pulled on an ife past the Konbini until we got to an alley. I took a quick glance. It wasn't a dead end, so we still had an escape route. We hid behind a rubbish bin. The mass of people that worked its way down Shah Jahan carried crowbars and hammers and whatever implements of destruction they could find. Torches made of rags dipped in cane diesel lit their way, the greasy flames casting harsh faces into relief.
There's an angry mob if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, but whose?
What do you mean? It's a mob. It's angry. They have torches, for God's sake.
Yeah, but are they Union? Freeborn? Are they with Letty? Rank and file? I can't make out any faces.
Oh, you'll pardon me if I don't walk out and ask. Hey!
I left Onenefe behind the bin and tiptoed to the edge of the alley's darkness. It was a mixed bag. Union and Freeborn, men and women, old and young. They all had the glass fist pin of the Temple of the New Holy Light on their shirts. Then one of them looked at me. I was hidden in the shadows. One of them turned for a brief moment, and the torchlight reflected in her cold, hardened face. It was Serafina Moss, the woman with the shark eyes. I made myself as small as I could. I recognized a few more faces in the crowd, people I'd seen milling around the temples I'd visited. I crept back to Onenefe.
They're with Sarian, maybe all of them.
What the hell is he doing?
Immanentizing the labor eschaton. Let's get out of here.
I pulled him away from the mob to the other end of the alley. Onenefe winced as I grabbed his arm, and he doubled over, knocking aside a crate full of empty bottles. Flashlights blinded us. We didn't get very far, but with Onenefe's busted ribs, I'd managed to swing him out of the alley onto Proctor Avenue. Onenefe's legs gave out. I lowered him in a doorway as the mob crowded around us. I didn't flinch from the lights.
Good. You're here. This man needs help.
The few angry faces I could see looked at each other.
Why did you run from us?
That's entirely beside the point.
I stepped up to the woman. Her hair was tied into a precise bun on the top of her head. A temple pin glinted on her coveralls and a pair of welding goggles hung from her neck. Her tattoo, a flame, made this woman a rare sight. Someone who'd kept the same job even after breaching.
My friend got crushed during the riot in the market. He needs to see a doctor.
The woman blinked, and I could see her eyes focus in the torchlight. I hadn't realized that I'd taken that look for granted. All day long, I'd talked with people who hadn't used their pies because the public was down. She looked like it was still running.
Excuse me, but do you actually have access? Is the public back up?
You need to keep quiet.
Man, if I had a blue boy for every time someone said that to me.
Could you please not antagonize these nice people until we've gotten some help? My side's killing me.
Sorry, force of habit.
Your habits are gonna kill you.
You too. Quiet. We can help.
She nudged the people next to her, and the crowd parted. I helped Onenefe to his feet and led him into the ocean of angry, tired faces. The welder walked behind us, and the crowd came back together in her wake.
I'm afraid I can't blink up your name like you can with mine. What may I call you?
She just put a finger to her lips. To hell with it. We got to the edge of the crowd, and the welder got in front. As we walked up Proctor, the crowd shuffled back toward the alley, off to join with the rest of the masses, stomping up Shah Jahan. Within minutes, the street was empty, but for the three of us. She led us to one of the row houses and beckoned us up the stairs to the stoop. The door opened a crack, and she motioned for us to go inside. I peeked in and saw nothing but darkness. This was a bad idea.
Oh, can't breathe.
I turned to the welder to ask if someone could come out here, but she was gone, faded into the shadows. Onenefe sagged from my grip.
No, come on, get up.
I was fighting his bulk as we slipped to the ground.
Help! Help!
The door flew open, and metal glinted in the moonlight. My brain screamed machete just in time for my leg to lash out. I connected with something solid. Then my attacker fell on top of me, his chest hitting my shoulder. I let go of Onenefe and reached behind me until I felt hair. I grabbed as much of it as I could. I brought my attacker's head down on the stoop's poor form banister. I shoved the weight off me, back toward the door. Then I scooped up Onenefe and dragged him down the steps.
Help! Someone help! They're killing us!
We got to the street, Onenefe now dead weight as I pulled him away. The people in the murder house chased after us. I set Onenefe down and turned, my feet planted, my fists up.
Come on, you fuckers! Come on and try to take me!
They stopped a few meters away. I could make out three shapes in the moonlight, all of them hunched forward and hungry. They held up their machetes, the purple moon dancing on the blades. I pointed at the one in the middle.
You! You're gonna lose an eye! You're gonna kill me, but everyone will know I took your eye!
You talk way too much.
As he lifted his machete, I stepped toward him, pulling his wrist and headbutting him. The machete fell to the ground. I kicked it aside and spun away, leaving my partner staggering. His friends weren't sure what to do, so I charged them.
Fuck this!
One of them, a woman, ran away into the night. That left the third. He was the biggest of all of them, but I could see his shoulders quivering in the moonlight. Either he was high or he was freaked out. I took a false, stompy step toward him. He dropped his machete and ran.
Hey!
I glanced to Onenefe. He was on his feet, but only because my first dance partner had a machete to the cane cutter's throat.
Put it down and walk away. I don't care why you want to hurt us. Just go right now and this can all end.
You're gonna be my bonus.
A light flickered on in a front porch. We froze at the glow of the LED bulb. Another porch light switched on. Then another and another, until the entire block was lit up like any other day. Front doors opened, spilling warm orange light into the narrow street. People walked out on their stoops and aimed flashlights at us. They came out into the streets, families, retirees, singles in various states of undress. Within minutes, we were surrounded.
Back off! I'll cut them both! You can't stop me!
The crowd was silent. People in their bathrobes and shirt sleeves stared at him.
None of you can get in my way!
A rock sailed out of the crowd. His eyes rolled up in the back of his skull, and he fell over like a dropped plank. Onenefe looked down, then took a wobbly step toward me. I closed the distance and helped him stay upright.
Does this all count as doing the work?
With overtime. A blue light bounced off the buildings, and the crowd parted. There, for the first time in 2 days, was a yellow and black police bumble car, its bubble lights clicking and rotating. Behind it was a beat-up ambulance. The caravan pulled up in front of us, and the bumble car's driver's side door swung open. Sony Bagram took her sweet damn time climbing down and walking over.
Well, this looks like quite the scene.
Two paramedics ran from the ambulance. They looked at the man on the ground.
Forget that, asshole! Help here!
They eased Onenefe onto a stretcher. Sony was wearing her street uniform, but the other cops that got out were in black and yellow riot gear as they hunkered down over the unconscious thug. Sony took off her cloth patrol cap. The stubble on her shaved head stood up in the night chill. She looked at the bloodied man on the ground, then gave her head a single shake.
Quite a scene indeed.
Where in the holy hell have you people been? The city's a mess and the police have been nowhere.
You and I have a lot to talk about.
I'm sure we do.
I'd prefer we talk inside and far away from here.
Do you?
Padma, I've got riot squads standing by all over the city. I've got precinct houses on lockdown. I'm trying to keep the mob from dropping the torches and getting the pitchforks. Help me out. Jesus, please.
I nodded and pointed at the ambulance. Wherever he goes, I go.
This one's one of us, right? Not another ghost?
I gave Sony the finger.
Fine, Jesus! I just want to talk, not hold a crisis negotiation. We'll all go in the ambo.
What about this guy?
He gets the premium seats with you, officer.
Sony walked to the ambo.
You coming?
I climbed in after her. Onenefe lay on the stretcher, an oxygen mask on his face.
What is reality?
The EMT was putting away a syringe.
I gave him a little painkiller, nothing too strong. We're saving it for later.
What's later?
Oh, just the end of the world.
The driver slammed the doors shut, and off we rolled into the night.
This is just about the perfect way to cap off today. Every precinct has been on tactical alert since the strike started, and that means making all my people wear armor while carrying half their body weight in water bottles and riot foam. You know how unbreathable our armor is?
Is that why you're not in it?
The advantages of command. My armor is back at the 14th Street Precinct, air-drying in my office. I've been on my feet since 4 this morning. Believe it or not, I am happy to see you. I heard about you walking around today, talking with people, but you vanished for a bit after the fire at your building.
I went back to Tonkay.
How? The outbound buses had stopped.
I got a lift.
And you didn't think to call?
Well, Sony, considering how the fire brigade didn't bother to show up, I wasn't sure what would happen with the police.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I couldn't spare the hands. I had to deal with looting on Kuttner.
There's nothing but clinics there.
Uh-huh. A bunch of footy thugs raided the dispensaries. Made off with a whole lot of painkillers. Everyone's convinced the city's going to burn and we won't be able to buy meds for a year. Half my people are just standing guard at every chemist in town.
Sony, what the hell is going on? This apocalyptic crap pops up every now and then, but it's never more than a dozen people. The whole city's losing it.
Well, I'm sure you've heard about our friend, the good Reverend Sarian.
I even went to see him.
What the hell for?
Because I was helping Keiko Nakamura. Remember her? Runs that Omusubiya? Sony's face darkened, and she looked at the EMT.
Would you mind leaving us for a moment?
I have to monitor this guy.
I can handle that.
Sony jerked her head toward the front of the ambulance. The EMT shook her head and climbed into the front, sliding a panel behind her.
This isn't how it was supposed to go.
What horrible thing are you not telling me?
Did I ever tell you about the night I came to Santee?
No, I don't think you ever have.
The last time I was in transit was en route to some job. You know, some shitty colony where I'd do accounting for the next decade before moving on to another assignment. A week out from the red line, the ship's cryo malfunctioned. I woke up thinking I'd arrived, and then I saw all these bald, angry people standing around in their underpants.
Bald?
Liao Kahn policy for transit was to shave everyone's heads. Helped with the hibernant or something. Anyway, the crew tried to keep us in check, but then word got around that the nearest repair ship was 8 months out. There wasn't enough food and water for everyone who was awake. The crew just didn't care enough to stop their cargo from taking over. They locked themselves in the hold. Everyone started panicking, so, as senior managing accountant, I sat down, did the math, and figured the only way out was through. We could stretch the food and water, spend the whole time doing as little as possible to conserve air. Santee was the closest destination, so I sent out a punch probe to let them know we were coming, and we jumped. I spent all my time breaking up fights and stopping a couple suicidal people from venting all of us into space. You know, that old, if I'm going, I'm taking everyone with me attitude. The relief ship, a Union one, made it just in time. All of us were glued to the monitors, watching it get closer and closer, just counting the minutes of air and the calories left. Another 2 hours, and we would have been dead. Anyway, 2 years later, we arrive at Santee. I'm still babysitting everyone, playing the go-between, keeping everyone calm. All I could think about was getting off the ship and doing anything that didn't involve people. I actually got offered a job in Thronehill, but the relief crew had convinced me that the best thing to do was breach. I went down the cable, slept for a week, then wandered into the Union Hall to declare myself in breach of my indenture. And there's this cop at the hall, the precinct lieutenant, a woman named Danai Skelter.
I don't think I know her.
Yeah, she had a heart attack the week before you showed up in Brushhead. She was a hard, hard woman. Had the department records for chin-ups and the number of ribs eaten at one sitting. She was standing by the terminal where I got my pie reburned and said, "Well, I hear you're good with people. Thought about becoming a cop?" And I just laughed. That was the last thing I wanted. But she needled me for weeks until I finally gave in. She swore up and down that I'd never have to sit behind a desk, never lack for action, never have to run spreadsheets again. Do you know what happens when you get promoted to chief of police? It's nothing but spreadsheets. Payroll, overtime, reimbursements, equipment. I'm an accountant again, and it sucks.
I'm really sorry to hear that, but I have no idea what it has to do with you not being around when the city needed you now.
Department budgets are disappearing. Not the money, but the actual spreadsheets. Before the public went out, I lost access to deployment schedules. I couldn't tell how many officers were on sick leave or vacation or just plain didn't show up to work. It all sounds like another Ghost Squad action, but I think someone in the union is egging people to strike. I think it's to cover something up. I don't know what. I don't think it's something like starting a fire on one side of town to distract people from a robbery on the other. It's bigger and weirder.
Letty Smythe set fire to her building.
Sony and I looked down at Onanefe. A great stoned grin broke across his face.
Padma told me about it.
You didn't think this was pertinent?
I didn't know whose side you were on until now.
You know, you've said a lot of hurtful things to me over the years. I think this tops it.
Well, I'm sorry, but I've never had the president of our union try to kill me before. It's not like there's a manual that tells me who I can and can't trust.
You can trust me.
I pointed at the badge on her blouse.
You or that?
You have any idea how many people are in this city? And all of us police with nothing but orders to maintain the peace. I've been keeping my oath. I have to, seeing how no one above me is.
We stared at each other.
You guys are friends, right?
We are. I'm sorry.
You know how many times we've done this?
Only every crisis. The rest of the time, we're downright pleasant.
You're an asshole, you know that?
Yeah, but at least you'll always know where I stand.
You are friends.
You're gonna be hating life once those meds wear off.
I still hurt like hell. The drugs just keep me from caring about it.
What happened to you? And why has Padma latched onto you?
My name is Ona Nefe, and I am the best damn cane cutter on this planet.
He's also involved with the FOC. He and Letty were in the same chapter.
And what a chapter it was! I had a job once cutting cane, worked all day through blood and pain.
What song is that?
Oh, Freeborn Work Song. It's got a good rhythm for cutting and packing. Plus, if you get the whole crew singing, it'll scare away the rats and vipers. Also, it was our secret signal to other FOC members. Time to kick ass. Oh, shit. I've given away our secret signal. Officer, please show me some mercy. Don't throw me in solitary. I'm too pretty for prison.
We don't do that anymore, dear.
Oh, thank Christ. Praise the D-Luck Buddha. Because I really like people. And being alone sucks.
We both froze. I reached for his neck and felt a strong pulse. Lightweight.
Too right. You think you can tell me about the alleged arson at your building?
As we edged through the streets, I told Sony everything.
That doesn't fit.
What?
Bakara. I had people stationed at every public market. Hell, I had twice the usual number.
I know. I saw them.
I had comms running through old radio rigs.
Yeah?
And I didn't hear anything about a riot there.
Sony knocked on the partition to the front seat. One of the EMTs slid it open.
Change of plans. Go to the 28th.
But the crowds!
Turn on the sirens, step on the gas, and get us there.
The EMT gave a quick nod and slid the partition shut. Why aren't we going to a hospital?
Because I can't keep you safe there.
What, now you're interested in my health and well-being?
I never stopped, but I can't take you with me, and I'm not gonna leave you at the hospital. You've had 3 attempts on your life today.
I only recall 2.
Bakara. What happened there was a hit.
No, it was a panic. People were worried about food, and there were all these rumors flying around.
And none of my people at the market calmed things down. They had standing orders to keep the crowd calm, even if it meant shutting the place down. What you saw when you got there, that shouldn't have happened. This all sounds like the provocateur games I heard all over the city in precincts that I lost contact with. If it happened here, it's because someone above me ordered it. Someone wants you dead. I don't. End of discussion.
You really think so?
Uh-huh. What happened at Bakara was a classic sloppy cover-up. Set off a panic, take out the target in the crush. The guys with the machetes cinches it for me. They were trying to finish off what the knife attack and the riot couldn't. What do all these incidents have in common?
The temple pins. But why me?
Uh-uh. Finding that out is not really my job now. Keeping you from getting killed is. I'm going to put you in protective custody in a precinct house in Rangitai. I handpicked everyone there.
Not to sound snotty, but did you do the same with the people at Bakara?
Maybe. I've sent out a lot of deployment orders on paper. Now I'm starting to wonder if any of them got through.
All the same, I really don't want to be locked up right now.
Would you rather be out there waiting for someone to chop you to pieces?
I don't like being caged.
Christ, Padma, I'm not going to lock you in a cell.
No, but you're going to keep me from figuring this out.
I'm sorry, I had no idea you'd become a deputized detective.
I haven't.
Exactly. That's why your ass is going to sit tight while the professionals figure it out.
Oh, like you did, right? I forgot professional means I'm gonna look out for the other people in my profession first.
You want me to arrest you? 'Cause I can do that. I know how much you like to make a production out of everything.
I'm on your side, remember? Solidarity and friendship and all that?
Uh-huh. Which is why I want you safe at the 28th Precinct, surrounded by people who are pointing their weapons away from you.
I looked at Sony's grim face for a moment, then slid the partition. Hi there. Stop the bus, please.
What?
Ignore her. Keep going.
If you stop the ambulance and let me out, I'll give you both a bottle of old windswept 10-year. The EMTs looked at each other. Okay, two bottles. The driver put on the brakes.
What the hell are you doing?
The wave tattooed on the driver's cheek curled as he gave her a pained look.
Chief, I could get half a year's salary for that.
Who's gonna buy it? Are you gonna convince a bunch of shareholders to invest in your bottle? Are you gonna dole it out one shot at a time?
But it's from Tongao's stash.
You're an idiot.
I smiled as I eased toward the back door. I'm just using what little leverage I've got left.
Then I'm sorry, I have to use mine.
Sony lunged across Onanefe, grabbed my right wrist, and slapped a handcuff on me. She clipped the other end to the handrail of Onanefe's gurney. You cuffed me!
Wasn't the first time. Probably won't be the last.
She touched the driver on the shoulder.
I don't want to do the same to you and your partner. Drive.
Four bottles each. Two to sell now, two to hide for the future.
That's enough! Get us to the 28th right the hell now, or I will subdue and detain both of you.
Five bottles! The driver put the ambulance into park. Sony pulled a taser from her belt. Sony!
I have had enough of your bullshit, Padma. I am trying to help you, and you want to throw money around? Buy your way out of trouble? It doesn't work like that. You can't just...
Sony froze, then flopped forward across Onanefe's face. Behind her, the EMT with the cornrows held a drained syringe.
Five bottles each, right?
Yeah. I hope you're okay with me not having them now, right?
You keep them at the distillery?
Yep. Think you can help me out? I rattled the cuffs. She gave me the once-over, then turned back into her seat.
After we get to Tonkei.
The driver shifted into gear, and the ambulance lurched forward. Of course, I didn't have any 10-year at the distillery. I didn't have any period. But now was not the time to reveal that bit of poor business planning. I had to get out of here. I reached for Sony, but the handcuff chain was too short. The vertical bars on the gurney's handrail kept me from sliding closer to her. I reached across with my left hand, but I still couldn't reach her. Then I realized I was indeed a dumbass. I put my back to the gurney and reached out my left hand. I got a firm grip on Sony's collar and pulled. She flopped to the floor in front of me. I pulled on her collar again, only to have her blouse come untucked. Her blouse tore at the seams in her armpits, revealing a simple body armor vest. She didn't move.
What's going on?
Nothing. Make sure to avoid the Prapati Causeway. It'll be jammed. I reached for Sony's belt, but it was too far. I tugged on her wrist. She slid toward me until her boot caught in the gurney's wheels. I pulled harder, but that only shook the gurney. The ambulance bumped over something, and Onanefe tumbled on top of Sony, which pulled off the oxygen mask. The EMT with cornrows stepped through the partition and stopped. It must have been a hell of a scene. Me tugging on an unconscious and shirtless Sony.
My apologies, I'm sure.
As Onanefe tried to get to his feet in the cramped space, the EMT held up the syringe.
I really wanted to save this for people who need it.
You can just let us go.
I got mouths to feed. Those bottles will go a long way.
Bottles?
The EMT loomed over Onanefe. I couldn't reach Sony's belt, but I could reach the hand that held the taser. I grabbed it, flicked off the safety. The EMT shuddered as 50,000 volts locked her muscles. She collapsed on top of Onanefe. The driver couldn't get in through the partition, so he ran to the back and threw open the doors. For a moment, all I saw was his darkened outline against the starry night sky. The syringe in his hand flashed in the light. I lashed out with a boot to his nose. Onanefe shoved the EMT off him and surveyed the scene.
We're in trouble, aren't we?
Such trouble. Help me get her on the gurney. Onanefe looked at the two unconscious women.
Which one?
Sony, the cop.
Why her?
I rattled the handcuff. We got her on the gurney, and I searched her belt. No key. Look on the floor, maybe the key fell.
We don't have time. Come on.
I'm a little stuck.
Then we bring her with us.
It was awkward as hell, but we got the gurney out of the ambulance. We had stopped in a darkened residential block, not unlike the one we'd left. In fact, the more I looked around, the more I realized we'd only gone around in circles. We're still in Halwadog.
You sure?
I pointed at the row houses. Those EMTs, they were in on it.
On what?
It! You know what? Let's get inside before someone tries to kill us again, okay? And then we can talk.
Yeah, that works for me.
Onanefe grabbed two bags of medical supplies and tossed them onto the gurney between Sony's legs. We rolled away from the ambulance as quickly as we could, the gurney's wheels bouncing over the damp, cracked pavement. 15 nerve-shattering minutes later, we had found an abandoned konbini. The door hung from its hinges, and the shelves that remained standing had been picked clean. The back office was open and emptied. We'd gotten Sony inside. I dug a chemical light out of the medical bag and cracked it. The room took on a sickly green glow, made even worse when Onanefe closed the office door behind us. I sat on the gurney. Well, I'd say I've been in worse situations, but I'd be lying. This is bad.
How long do you think your friend will be out?
No idea. You only got a couple of CCs. Looks like she took the full load.
Is there anything that could wake her up?
I looked in the medical bag. Probably.
Do you know anything about medicine?
Nope. You?
Nope.
Terrific. She's gonna be pissed when she wakes up. Too bad I can't restrain her. We checked her again for handcuff keys, but found nothing. At least I had time to look over the gurney's handrail construction. It was made of three horizontal aluminum pipes fastened to two verticals. The whole thing could collapse thanks to the rivets punched through the horizontals. The rivets wouldn't budge, but the verts were bolted to the frame of the gurney. Four hex head bolts held it in place. I could unscrew the nuts and only remain attached to a bunch of pipework. At least it would be portable. I took out my trusty multi-tool, snapped the pliers into place, and got to work.
I imagine someone will come looking for her. It's not like police chiefs are allowed to vanish in the middle of a crisis.
Unless someone wants her to. I told Onanefe about Sony's getting locked out of police decisions and her suspicions about Bakara.
You don't think those EMTs are part of this, do you? I mean, attacking your friend and all.
Ah, I caught the first nut as it fell free into my palm. No, that was probably me. I told him about the bribe. By the time I was done, Onanefe's mouth hung open.
10-year? You're sitting on a cache of 10-year?
Of course I'm not. There's no such thing as 10-year. I got to work on the second nut. Tongao sold the last batch before I took over.
But everyone says...
Everyone says exactly what Tongao had fed them and what I have fed them. It's not anything special. I mean, if I had rum that expensive, don't you think I'd have sold it? Don't you think I would have bought a ship and crewed it and sailed from one end of occupied space to the other instead of staying here?
No, I think you'd have stayed here regardless. I think you like this place.
The second nut came loose. Really? What gives you that impression?
You're working way too hard to hang on to what you've got. You're tied into Santee like the most radical member of the FOC. This place is in your blood.
That's a really nice load of crap you're selling. I struggled with the third nut. It had gone on cockeyed and the bolt had been partially stripped. No wonder you guys don't have a seat at the table.
Why do so many people come here? Why not any other union-run world?
Because it's the last resort before jumping beyond.
But it hasn't always been. Santee is special. It's that feeling when the wind comes in off the ocean at dusk. All those smells, all these people, all this life. People hear about Santee, about how good we got it. Even when we're working our asses off, we're at each other's throats. It's a good place that we've made, don't you think?
Damn it. The third nut refused to budge. I rattled the bolt, pounded it with the butt of the multi-tool, but it remained stuck. I looked at the remaining nut and hoped removing it would be enough. Maybe I could just pry the thing loose. I got to work on the fourth nut, hoping it wouldn't surprise me. You know I used to be a union recruiter, right? You don't have to sell me on this place.
Sorry. Force of habit. You miss it? Recruiting?
Not anymore. It was really fun when I started out. Traffic was great, so it was easy to convince people to jump ship. I could just borrow a rooftop transmitter and blast the public's live feed into space. People would slide down the cable just to see what was going on down here. They'd had it with being indentures. Most of them fit in nicely. A few didn't. But none of them ever went to Throne Hill to turn themselves in. They were done with being property. I hope you never go through that. No matter how much I got paid or how good the bennies were, I always knew I belonged to Walton Warumbo Universal Unlimited. I could be replaced, just like any old part. The fourth nut fell free and danced on the poor form floor for a moment. I scooped it up and showed it to Onanefe. All the training, all the schooling, all the pats on the back, I might as well have been this. Once I was no longer useful, I would be removed and tossed aside, stuck into some other slot that Wawa thought needed filling. I tossed the nut into a corner of the office. Give me a hand, would you please? We rolled the gurney against the wall and collapsed the sides, so the bed was only a few centimeters above the floor. We put our backs to the opposite wall and grabbed the handrail. I planted my feet on the gurney's frame and nodded at him to follow suit.
I don't know how much help I'll be with this busted rib.
Just do what you can. Ready?
Uh-huh.
We pulled on the handrail. The bar strained against the stripped nut, and I could swear the thing moved a few millimeters closer to us.
Oh, a break, please.
We relaxed. I kept my grip on the handrail, willing the nut to turn into gelatin. It didn't comply. Did you have anything to do with the strike?
Don't get me wrong. I would have loved for us to strike. I have a list of demands as long as my arm. But what I didn't have was a disciplined movement. It's easy to get angry people to march, but a strike? That's a different beast. You know what it's like, right? Making sure the demands are clear, keeping people on the picket lines, making sure no one folds and goes home when they're tired of occupying the manager's office.
Uh-huh. It sucks.
It does indeed. Which is why this has been such a disaster. It's gonna set us back until after this contract. All of us.
If we aren't killed first, we pulled again. This time, the nut was giving way. I hoped it was weaker than the handrail, or this would be for naught.
Another break, please.
So the FOC isn't getting people to leave the campong?
I didn't say that. I've no doubt they're stirring the pot. The problem is that they're not working with a recipe. There are a couple of hotheads who've been screaming for us to do something, but none of those somethings have been enough. No one wants to negotiate. No one wants to talk. And I'm talking about doing that with the other freeborn. We're not this monolith, you know.
Neither is the Union. That was always the part I hated the most, convincing people to quit being stupid and just listen to me.
Well, with a pitch like that, how could they refuse?
I'm bright enough not to say it like that to their faces, even though that's the job. My first organizing gig was when Wawa wanted to shut down the microcleaner plant at Brushhead.
I remember that. Didn't you guys strip the place clean?
That part everyone knows about because I made sure to tell as many people as possible. What I didn't talk about was the incredible hassle of getting all those people to go into the plant in the first place.
You kidding? I thought anyone with ink would be happy to smash a Big Three facility into tiny pieces.
And you'd be right. But that would have solved nothing. Everyone would have been out of work, which meant they wouldn't have gotten paid, which meant they couldn't make rent, and on, until your jobless angry mob is a jobless, homeless, hungry angry mob. We had to make a point to Wawa, and we had to get something for ourselves in the process. No one wanted to listen. They just wanted to break things.
What'd you do?
I did the work. I talked with every floor manager, every worker, every spouse. I found out they were fine with losing their jobs, because the jobs sucked, but they were worried about where they'd live. One of them, this extruder tech named Mesh Lola Brigida, she had the bright idea to turn the plant into housing. And that meant bringing in architects, builders, all the people who could make that happen. And no one wanted to do it. Not for free, anyway. The union didn't want to pay for it, the employees didn't have the cash to pull together, and the whole thing would have fallen apart except for me bullshitting everyone into it. I had this one machinist, a guy named Giacomo Teff, who was great at taking lathes apart. There were six in there, big industrial pieces, and they were obsolete and dangerous. Every couple of months, they'd slip a gear and change speed, and some poor operator would lose control of whatever they were working on and get sent to the hospital. He was the only one who could keep them working. One of the architects, Smitty Pride, said the lathes could be repurposed into rooftop windmills. The place needed power, everyone hated the lathes, so I asked Giacomo to do his thing. He refused. Said it would be sacrilege to dismantle the lathes, even though we both knew they would never be turned on again. He was so attached to them, even though they'd cost him a finger.
So then what'd you do?
I kept on at him, kept pointing out that the lathes did more good apart than whole. He kept saying if the plant was closing, he wasn't going to take orders from anyone ever again. I thought he was just being a stubborn ass until I asked the other machinists, and they told me that Giacomo and Smitty were neighbors who shared a common wall. When Giacomo got home from the night shift, Smitty was awake, messing around with his windmills. Giacomo couldn't stand the noise, and he couldn't stand Smitty. Giacomo didn't want to give Smitty the satisfaction.
And?
And I had a brilliant insight. Giacomo was in charge of the construction and maintenance of the windmills. He got to boss Smitty around. Smitty didn't like it, but he wanted to see his designs happen in real life. Took me 6 hours to deal with that, but it worked.
People, right? That's the problem with the FOC. No one wants to talk about what they want because they're afraid they won't get it. Or that they'll get it and be disappointed they didn't ask for more. I keep telling everyone we need small, discrete goals that add up to a big payoff. But everyone wants the big, sweeping changes now. Big changes have a tendency to knock innocent bystanders aside. I'd rather minimize that.
When all this settles, and if I'm still alive, I'm going to make sure you talk with the right people.
You think someone's going to get you?
First time's an accident, second time's a coincidence, third time's a trap filled with machete-swinging nut bars.
You think it's Letty? She did set fire to your building.
True, but I think that was more of a ploy to freak me out. If she wanted me dead, wouldn't she have done it then and there? Knocked me out, left me to burn?
Then who? Hey, you okay?
Evan Rootsarian once had a glass-blowing operation. He also had people who built a covert refinery underground where there was no pyreception. Son of a bitch!
What?
It is Sarian. All of the people who attacked us, they wore glass temple pins, even at Bakara. That's how they're communicating, even with the public down. Sarian's running this whole deal.
But I thought he was this meek little lamb now.
No, that was just another act. I should have seen through it. Every time Sarian talked to me, there was someone else around. He always had witnesses. He didn't want anything to mess with his image as a non-violent man of the cloth. Now I really want Sony to wake up so she can go arrest that asshole.
But why? I don't see that. The man's built himself this movement. He can get the entire planet to come here and flood the streets. Why try and off you?
He talked about wanting to keep the first attack quiet because he didn't want people to get worked up over my death.
That was nice of him.
Wasn't it? Except now I think he would have been perfectly happy to see me killed. If there were any kind of unrest, he'd be able to step in and play the great peacemaker. Let's rally around the death of dear sister Padma and all that. Plus, there's always good old revenge.
For putting him in jail?
Why not? He lost everything. And what he's got now may be big, but it's not as big.
You don't think commanding a planet-wide strike is big?
You and I would, because we're not insane. Sarian wanted to upend the entire economy. Not just Santee, all of occupied space. He wanted the biggest platform possible to stage his great victory in the struggle.
Then why not another knife attack? Why something like the market or the machetes?
Maybe when the first attack didn't work, Sarian figured I'd outlived my usefulness. He used Bakara as cover to get me crushed to death. And when that didn't work, he set up that ambush. He doesn't just want to win. He wants to dominate. And he'll do it by scaring the living crap out of anyone in the Union or the FOC by having hit squads. It would have been a very messy, very public way to die.
Well, then how does he wind it down?
I don't think he does. It would take a lot of work and a lot of talking, and I haven't seen any signs of that. People are scared. They're passing around rumors. They don't know what's up. He'll let the rioting burn itself out, then step up as hero and savior.
How?
We know he's got his own communication lines. We know he's got stockpiles of food and meds at his temples. I bet he's got bigger caches all over the city. Hell, he built a state-of-the-art refinery underground. He can send out gangs, like the one we saw at Shah Jahan, subdue any opposition, buy everyone else off with food. The Union leadership will collapse, and then he's in charge. I have no idea what happens next. Maybe he'll just fiddle while Santee burns. Maybe he'll be the great leader we need. Either way, I'm not going to sit here and wait it out. I'm going to go out and do something.
That sounds like an epitaph.
I didn't say it would be something smart.
Definitely an epitaph.
I've written better. Come on, let's get me loose. We squared our shoulders to the handrail, gave each other a nod, and pulled. The nut popped off the bolt, straight into my right eye. I just let go of the handrail and put both hands over my eye. I could see nothing but dull orange. Eventually, I opened my unjabbed eye. Onanefe crouched in front of me, worry lining his face. My right eye throbbed.
There's no blood, but that looked bad.
Another epitaph. I really don't want to move my hands.
Does that happen a lot in the city?
Could be heavy equipment. Maybe someone's building barricades.
For what?
For whatever's coming next.
I don't think I like what's coming next. You think we should go?
I looked at Sony with my good eye. All three of us are in no condition to run. Onanefe dug through the medical bags until he held up a spray stick.
This says it's a topical painkiller.
Does it say to keep away from eyes? He looked at the label.
I don't think so.
Maybe we should wait to find a pro. One of the Kambini's walls buckled, and I jumped up to cover Sony as ceiling tiles rained down. When the shaking stopped, I opened my good eye, only to jam it shut again quickly. What felt like sandpaper rubbed the inside of my eye, probably grit from the plastered ceiling and the busted tiles.
We need to go!
Can't.
Everything from my nose down to my lungs burned. I could smell nothing but the must of plaster powder. The air in the office was getting impossible to breathe. We had to get out. I nudged the gurney toward where I remembered the door was. The wheels jammed on the debris that crunched under my boots, and the frame bumped into the door frame. Onanefe held on for dear life as I shoved and shook the gurney through the dust. I didn't want to open my eyes, but I also didn't want to be killed by something I couldn't see. I scrabbled around until I got a grip on the medical bags. I dug inside them until I felt a squishy cane plast bag that I hoped was full of saline. I forced my left eye open enough to make sure. In the dim light, I saw NaCl on the label. I tore it open and splashed the solution into my face. It stung like ocean water, but it was enough to wash away the dust. My right eye stayed swollen shut. Onanefe had shielded Sony's lower torso. Dust made a trail from the crown of his head down to his tailbone. I helped him stand up and cleaned his face. Gray slurry ran down his cheeks, dripping off his chin.
Is she okay?
The top of her body, where we had shielded her, was dusted with a few particles of plaster. Everything from her waist down was now a dingy gray. I gave her a prod. Okay, enough. I then made the mistake of looking up. Of the 20 shop houses on the street, 5 of them had been stomped flat. Gouts of flame rolled up from the wreckage, lighting the clouds of greasy smoke that loomed overhead. Frantic rescuers dug at the rubble and shoved aside the wreckage of a tuk-tuk. People wandered the shattered sidewalk, arms hanging loose at the wrong angles. In the flicker, I could see bodies and pieces of bodies hanging off crooked street lamps. I grabbed the medical bags.
Stay with Sony.
Help!
I walked toward the closest fire. A man not much older than me stood on the sidewalk, holding another man in his arms. Both of them were covered in soot and blood. Their skin shone in the firelight. As I got closer, I saw the unconscious man had a face full of glass shards and burns across the side of his head. I eased them to the ground.
What happened?
The crying man just looked down at his partner. I dug into the bags and realized I had no idea what to do with their contents. There were packs of loaded syringes, rolls of gauze, bottles of pills. I'd been through disasters before, but I didn't know much more past basic first aid. I pulled out an antibiotic spray and squirted wherever I saw blood. There was a pair of cane plast exam gloves, but they were too small. I put them on anyway and started wrapping both of their wounds with gauze. That got the man calm, though he never took his eyes off his partner.
What happened?
He wiped blood off his cheek. There was ink there, but I couldn't make it out.
We were having a block meeting at the Pulaski's, and then...
Three blocks east, a lick of flame curled toward the sky.
Oh, God!
The night sky glowed red and orange under a cloud cover of smoke. The city wasn't just on fire, it was exploding. A hand clamped on my shoulder. I turned and saw Sony, her eyes fixed on the distance. Onanefe stood with her. She looked down at me.
What do you want to do?
Whatever we can. Sony nodded and clicked on the radio on her belt.
I've heard worse plans.
We turned the ruined Kanbini into our triage hospital. Onanefe and I had walked up and down the street, helping people to the space we cleared inside. The Kanbini's roof had stayed intact, so we'd shoved the shelves to the sides to make room. In less than 15 minutes, we had 30 people with burns, cuts, broken legs, and concussions all laid out on the floor. We worked until our legs and the bags of meds were out. The three of us huddled together in a corner of the Kanbini. When I woke up, weak dawn light was trying to break in through the shattered storefront. I wormed my way out from between Sony and Onenefe. The damage looked even worse now that I could see it. The fires had died down thanks to the survivors' efforts, but not before half the buildings had been burned to the ground.
Padma?
Sony stood in the ruined doorway, holding up a spray bottle.
I think this is a painkiller. Forgot I had it in my utility belt.
Give it to that lady with the broken hip. We need to keep her calm.
I'd like to put a bit in your eye.
No, it's not like I can use my pie right now.
It's not your pie I'm worried about.
I don't want it.
Can I put a bandage on your eye then? Or do you want to save those too?
Fine, if it'll get you off my back. Sony popped a fist-sized gauze pad out of a pouch on her belt. I held still long enough for her to tape it over my right eye.
We'll have to get you to a doctor.
Them first. Can't you raise anyone? Sony held up her radio, a tiny handheld unit.
Total silence. Our relays got knocked out.
You sure?
Uh-huh. We had one on top of the house that got blown up.
You think that was on purpose?
I don't know. I don't have a clue what's going on, Padma. I keep hearing sirens, but I've yet to see an ambo or a patrol wagon. We have to get out of this neighborhood and start talking to other people. Find EMTs, other police, doctors, whatever.
Is that the plan? Leaving?
It's a plan, and it involves me. I'm the least injured and the only one with a badge.
You think that matters right now? Christ, someone's setting off bombs.
We don't know that. It could be crap piping, makeshift heaters, or just plain bad luck.
You can't possibly believe that.
I have to. Otherwise, it means our city's coming apart at the seams, and I'm not ready to believe that. Not yet. Not until I know that all the people under my command have given up or gotten themselves killed.
You're right, but I still want to go with you.
You're hurt. It's gonna be hard enough to get around.
I got a bolt to the face, not a concussion.
Did you just get magical diagnostic power? You might have a blood clot working its way to your brain. What happens if we're walking and you stroke out?
Probably the same thing that would happen if I stayed here. I'm going.
No, you're not. That's an order.
Are you fucking kidding me? You can't order me.
The hell I can't. This is a civil disturbance, and as the chief of police, I have the power to—
Oh, please. You don't have the power to do squat unless the Prez says so, and you know it.
The same Prez who set fire to your house? That's who you're gonna defer to?
Hell no. But I'm also not deferring to someone wearing a badge, because many other people with badges have completely failed to do their jobs. You haven't, Sony. You take that badge seriously. But what about the people you sent to Pekara? They can't be the only police like that in the city.
I hate it when you're right about stuff like this.
Me too. Can we go now?
I can. You can't.
Why not?
You've only got one eye.
Oh, like that's gonna stop me.
Yeah?
Sony walked to my right side.
How many fingers am I holding up?
I gave her the bird.
Wrong.
She put her left hand in front of my left eye. She had shaped it into a gun, her thumb cocked back.
We're walking. Someone sneaks up on your right side. You can't see anything until it's too late.
Then I'll walk on your left.
Damn it, Padma! I'm trying to keep you from getting hurt.
Too late.
Shit! You're impossible, you know that?
That's why you trust me. You have something to add?
I do. Me.
Oh, hell no. I will have enough to worry about without both of you invalids coming along.
While you two were arguing, I helped myself to Chief Bagram's painkillers. Not all of them, mind you, but enough so I don't have to think about my chest exploding. Now that I have a clear head, I have something to point out.
Yes?
What we are seeing is a breakdown of trust. There's no trust between you two, or between the citizenry and the police, or between the freeborn and the union. That's the thread that's run through every discussion we've had, Padma. People don't trust anything right now. People didn't trust they'd get paid, or get to keep their jobs or their homes, and they got angry.
Angry enough to start blowing up their own neighborhoods?
These bombings are meant to reinforce that mistrust. I would argue that this is all deliberate. We're seeing an orchestrated campaign.
And how do you know this?
Because it's what we talked about doing two contracts ago.
Who exactly is we?
Onenefe's eyes flicked to me. I nodded. Tell her the fucking truth.
I'm on the executive committee of the FOC.
Do you have any idea what you assholes did two contracts ago? I was a rookie, and I had to do cleanup duty after every one of your bombings.
Oh, you really know how to pick your company, Padma. First that ghost, now this terrorist.
I think you might be overreacting a bit, Sony.
This? No, this is a calm, measured response. If I were overreacting, your friend here would be weeping.
All the same, I don't think he or his group is responsible for all of this.
Then that can come out in court.
For what?
Consorting with terrorists.
So what, you're gonna drag him off to the nearest cell, lock him away? He helped me keep you safe while you were unconscious.
The FOC killed police. They bombed precinct houses.
That wasn't us.
Then who was it?
I don't know.
This is a waste of time. You want to talk about trust now? I'd love to hear you talk about trust.
22 years ago, the FOC's executive committee met to determine what we would do during the upcoming contract. A small faction wanted to engage in a bombing campaign. They thought the only way to get the union to pay attention to us was to show strength. Now, I argued against it because, surprise, no one would trust us if we started blowing people up. Letitia Arbusto-Smythe was on the committee with me. We were on the same side. It took a week of debate, but we finally prevailed. There would be no bombings. And they happened anyway. None of the people in the faction claimed responsibility. In fact, they all turned themselves in to the police as a show of good faith. They never went to trial because there were never any charges. We didn't do it. And if we knew who did, we'd have turned their asses in.
Not good enough.
What more do you want? It was good enough for the police back then.
That was then. I was only a rookie. Now I'm the chief of police. I've had my comms cut, my people moved, and my city on fire. I need to know who was in that faction because it's a pretty good bet they're behind this now.
Well, then you can go to Lanxia Cemetery because that's where they are now.
So they're meeting there?
And then Sony saw Onanefe's eyes, the way he tried to keep them open despite the tears welling up. Whose funeral was it?
Does it matter?
If he was buried at Lan Xia, he lived in my neighborhood. I'd like to know the name, yes.
Milk Gorsky was a cutter and a Zen priest. He spent all his downtime teaching kids to read. He used to cry whenever he found dead animals after a cane burn. He was the friendliest man you ever met. Which is why it shocked me when he proposed the bombing campaign. Even though he planned it to make sure no one would get injured, giving everyone plenty of warning, making sure only to take out the target building, it hurt me to think he'd do that. We were such good friends until he made that proposal. I hadn't spoken to him since the vote. He died last week, alone. In some grubby bedsit in Fao Shui. He left a handwritten will that just said he wanted to be at Lanxia because he liked the shade there. He'd spent enough of his time in the sun.
Are they all there? The ones who wanted the bombings?
Uh-huh. Milt was the last one of them left.
You know about this?
No. It must not have looked like a suspicious death or I would have gotten a call.
Yeah, Milt was always in poor health. And considering how nasty his place was, it looked like he hadn't gotten better. Dirty dishes in the sink, spoiled food in the fridge, that kind of thing.
You were there after he died?
Uh-huh. I knew his landlady. She called me after the police went in to investigate the smell. Oh. He'd been in there a while. A couple of months, the coroner said.
Did all of them die like that? Natural causes?
Uh-huh. Susan Broyles had a heart attack. Thanchanok Morrison drowned. Jimmy Nguyen got hit by a tuk-tuk. But he was also really drunk, and considering how much he liked his rum, that's practically natural causes.
When did all this happen?
I don't know. In the past few years. They were in their 50s when we met. Letty and I were the youngest ones on the committee.
You said everyone who voted for the bombings died. What about the people who voted against them? Are they still alive?
There were 7 of us on the executive committee. Of the 4 who voted against, there's just me, Letty, and Marquise Spadinette. Luella Prima, she was the chair, and the whole thing broke her heart. She died a few weeks after the vote. Marquise moved to the other side of Santee after the bombings. She didn't want anything to do with us anymore. Haven't heard from her in years.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking it would be nice to find a working phone and see if Marquise is still alive.
Why wouldn't she be?
Because she's the last FOC member at that vote, excepting Onanefe and Letty.
What, you think she's behind this?
Maybe. I don't know. What was Milt's proposal? What was his plan?
He was going to pack tuk-tuks with fertilizer bombs. Small enough to take out a storefront, knock a union office out of commission, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. The other day, one of Jilly's drivers told me that a lot of tuk-tuks have been boosted. And I've heard complaints of how hard it's been to hail a ride over the past month.
You don't think...
When we got outside this morning, I saw a shop house blow up. A tuk-tuk was parked in front of it.
You sure?
I realize my memory isn't as accurate as my pie's feed, but yeah. I thought the house had exploded, but maybe it was the tuk-tuk. Maybe someone's carrying out Milt's plan.
Who else knew the details?
Just us. And whatever police were in on the interrogations.
You think you can find out who they were?
Uh-uh. Not with the public down. But I can't believe any police are doing this.
Yeah? Like you can't believe your people just stood by at Bacara? 2 days ago, I would have laughed in your face if you told me that. I would have laughed if you told me the president of the union would have set my building on fire. But now? We're all getting played, Sony. And I don't know about you, but it really pisses me off.
I do like it when you get pissed off. Things happen.
Damn straight. You want to make them happen with me?
What do you have in mind?
Let him go first. We need him.
You're gonna have to explain a little bit before I do that.
Like the man said, it's all about trust. We need to build a case.
That's what I wanted to do before you started insisting on coming along.
And if you don't, you're not going to get much done. What have we not seen this morning? What would be here on any other day during any other crisis?
I agree that the emergency response has sucked.
It's been non-existent. Whether that's because someone on high is pulling strings or police are freaked out, I don't know. What I do know is that having them hide is only going to encourage more chaos. There has to be a presence out here that says, we see there's a problem and we are working on it.
And you think that presence should be the three of us?
Uh-huh.
I cannot wait to hear how you're going to make that happen.
We're going to talk to people.
Are you buying this?
I'm willing to hear some details.
Good, because I think you're going to love this.
I'm worried about how excited you are.
That means I'm onto something. We are going to talk to people, and we are going to say one simple thing. We hear you.
Did you hit your head?
Possibly, but it has nothing to do with this. We need to reassure the citizenry that this crisis is going to pass and that we're all going to get through it by working together.
I think your friend's right. That's delusional.
It's what's going to work because it's what always works.
Talking?
And listening. The listening is more important than the talking.
Jesus, Padma. This is not the time to sing songs and have everyone hold hands.
Why not?
Because someone is setting off bombs?
And that's why people will be reassured that Chief Sony Bagram of the Santee City Police Department is walking the streets instead of hiding inside an emergency bunker.
And what can Chief Bagram do on her own? Especially now that she's out of medical supplies.
She's going to become the rallying point for all emergency personnel who still believe in what their badges represent. Serve and protect, right?
Suppose I go out there. Why does he come along?
Ah, our friend from the FOC is going with us to show that the freeborn are valued members of society and that their fears will be allayed and their demands will be met.
Really? Just from having him along?
Absolutely. This man, like you, stands for something important. Not taking any more bullshit.
This is true.
There will be freeborn who know him by reputation, and there will be sympathetic union people who know what Onanefe stands for. Everyone will see him walking with the chief of police and a beloved hero of the union.
Beloved?
You bet your ass I'm beloved. That's why you're going to come with me. We're going to show everyone how trust is supposed to work. That's what you had in mind on an FA, right? We all need each other. No one side is strong enough to prevail. If the police are considered untrustworthy, Sony's useless. If the freeborn are untrustworthy, you're useless. If the union is untrustworthy, I'm useless. So let's all be useless together.
That is the worst speech I have ever heard.
It's a rough draft. I can always edit later. But you get what I'm saying, right?
The kumbaya solution never works.
That's because it's bullshit. Holding hands and singing songs around a campfire means no one listens. No one learns why the others are pissed off. There's no reconciliation. That's what we need. And we're not going to get it from Letty because she's the one pulling all the strings.
She is?
Uh-huh. That's the case we're going to build. I thought this was all Sarian and his whack jobs running around. But now I think he's getting played, too.
What makes you think Letty's behind this?
Him. The loose end.
The what?
You were at the vote. You knew what the bombing plan was. And you were at Milt's funeral.
So?
Was Letty there?
Yeah?
Milt's funeral was the morning Letty visited me. She came to my place and started that fire knowing it would draw Onanefe and his crew. And she ensured their arrival by getting the police and fire chiefs to shift their officers around so there was no timely response.
That's pretty thin.
Not when you take into account everything that's happened since. When Onanefe didn't snuff it at the fire, someone tried to stab me. Except he was going for Onanefe.
He was pretty fixed on you, Padma.
Then why was he yelling, "You're in my way"? I thought he meant that figuratively, but he didn't. I got in between you and the knife. After he stabbed me, he wasn't angry, he was mortified. As soon as I get my pie working, Sony, I'll show you the footage.
Well, what about Bakara?
That was cover. Sony said all her officers had been pulled back. We saw people shaking their heads and arguing about the public being wonky right before the riot. That means someone monkeyed with their pies. The only ones who can order that are the executive committee.
But the people who run the public are on strike.
Are they? Are any of the people who actually run the city marching? Have you heard from any of them? Have you seen any demands, any speeches, any signs indicating that the people who do the work don't want to? No. The only person who's been broadcasting is Sarian, because he's just cover for what Letty's doing.
Which is...
That part I have no idea. I don't know what her game is, but I know she's the one running it. I just know it.
Your gut instincts won't be any good in court.
It will in the court of public opinion. And that's where we have to try this. That's why we have to get into the streets. No one has challenged Letty's narrative. No one's countered her story that everything is hopeless, that we're all doomed. We have to do that. We have to give people some hope.
This still sounds like kumbaya.
Talk without works is dead. And we are going to do the work.
I'm ready to do the work, if it pleases you.
Where do we go first?
Back to Bakara Market.
Why?
Because I've got a case of rum stored there. Sony was pissed, and she spent the next 10 blocks making sure I knew it.
When I joined the police, you know what they taught us first?
Hairstyling?
That the very worst thing to do in this job was to offer someone a drink.
Your instructors must have been a ton of fun.
I'm serious, Padma. I know rum makes this world go round, but right now, the city is full of angry, terrified people. Throwing booze into the mix is going to make things worse.
It's going to get them to come out of their houses and relax.
Not today, it won't. We've both been at Big Lily's at last call. People who've been nursing grudges for months will find that excuse to throw a punch, and then no amount of talking can calm them down.
Then what do you suggest? Do we wait until another bomb goes off? Do we wait until people break out the power tools and start slashing each other to pieces? Because that's what's next, Sony. We have to do something. We have to make a choice.
But throwing a party is not the best choice to make.
Really? I think everyone would much rather have a party than a bloodbath. Besides, it's Saturday.
Is it? I've lost all track of time.
It is not Saturday. It's only Thursday.
I think people would rather have my Saturday than your Thursday.
Can we split the difference and call it Friday?
Yes! Here's a man who gets it. You coming or what?
I know the public isn't up, but I'm going on record right now by saying that whatever happens next will be all your fault.
Wouldn't be the first time someone said that. As we approached Bakara, I saw that Kasha and her security people had been busy during the night. Anything that hadn't been bolted down had been turned into a barricade that ran around the perimeter of the market. Empty kegs and molasses drums propped up head-high walls made of smashed tables and stall counters. As we got closer, I saw sparkles along the top of the barricade, smashed glass held in place with molasses paste. In front of us, there was a break in the barricade. 3 security women stood there, eyeballing us as they showed us their cricket bats.
Hold up your hands.
We complied. As the guards frisked us, I recognized Kasha among them. What gives, Kasha?
We've got all kinds of people here seeking refuge, and we have to make sure no one brings anything dangerous inside. I'm glad you're alive.
Was I not supposed to be?
We'd heard you got chopped to pieces by a bunch of freeborn.
Says who?
I don't know. There's all kinds of rumors floating around. The Prez is dead, Walwa is reclaiming the planet.
I heard the Prez ran up the cable last night and she's hiding out on the anchor.
Where'd you hear that?
Like Kasha said, all kinds of rumors. Some guy fixing the water filter was talking about it. Of course, he also said the co-op was giving away free rum, so he's probably full of it.
I looked at Sony, who shook her head so hard I thought it would fall off. Funny you should mention rum. Does anyone feel like a drink?
Are you serious?
I'm a member of the co-op. I never joke about rum. I tried to put on my best I am completely serious face. It must have worked because Kasha lowered her cricket bat.
I'm listening.
Throughout this city, I have many cases of old windswept rum. Some of it is the standard production batch, but there are a few bottles of the really good stuff here and there. I want people to come out of their hiding places, bring their grills and their food and whatever they've got, and I want us all to sit down and eat and talk. After all, it's Friday.
No, it isn't. It's Thursday.
It's Friday now. Are you going to let me get in to get my rum?
Where is it exactly?
Uh-uh. My rum is not for people to hoard, Kasha. It's for sharing, and I'm the one who's going to pass around the goods. There's a case in here, certainly, but you won't be able to get it.
Is that a challenge? I'm pretty good at challenges.
I'm sure you are. How much liquor can you hold?
That is definitely a challenge.
She stepped aside, and I beckoned Onanefe and Soni to follow me into the ruins of Bakara Market, along with Kasha. We walked through the market.
This is not going to work.
Looking around, I wanted to agree. Whatever goods had been out in the open yesterday were gone. Bakara had been stripped bare of anything edible or valuable. People huddled around the last embers on the grills, and kids picked through the compost bins. A little girl popped out of one bin and held a pineapple core aloft. The kids all skittered away as we approached.
Holy shit, it's only been a day.
Everyone's hoarding the last of the food. We probably spent more time keeping people from raiding the stalls than we did building the barricades. The worst rumor that came tearing through is that every grocery warehouse and farm is on fire. With the public down, there's no way to verify, so... Oh. I've been up all night, and I'm really goddamn hungry, and I can't even find so much as an almond. I know I'm gonna be a bear by dinner time. What's gonna happen everywhere else? Where's the goddamn union?
It's right here. I tapped my cheek. I pointed at Kasha's tattoo. And here, I nodded at Soni. There, too.
What about him?
He's still thinking about it. Though he agrees with the sentiment.
Which is?
That we're all in this together, right?
Fair enough. Why hasn't the press said anything? Shit, she could have printed up flyers or something by now.
Letty Arbusto-Smythe is making this all happen. She shut down the public, made the cops withdraw, and let our city fall apart. She put out a hit on Onanefe because he's part of the FOC. She wants this chaos.
That's insane.
Why? I don't know yet. But I know if she wanted it to stop, she would have done it by now. I want it to stop, and that's what we're going to do. And we start by getting everyone out of their hidey holes and acting like people. We rounded a corner, and the sweet smell of crushed cane washed over me. We stopped in front of a ruined stall, a sign proclaiming best cane juice in town flapping in the breeze. Two little boys, probably 8 years old, crouched next to a smashed cane press. They started and brandished splintered cane stalks like swords. Both wore forest green Nortec United football jerseys. Their faces were smears of dirt and dust. I held out my hands and waited. The boys' eyes were big, and they looked through me. I had no idea what these kids had seen in the past 24 hours, but the blank looks on their faces told me it had been horrible. I tried to make my face as calm and friendly as possible. After a minute, they lowered the stalks. I hunkered down in front of them. My name's Padma. You two okay? They kept staring. I got the emergency date bars out of my trouser pocket, and the boys focused on the soft, brown rectangles in my hands. Do you have families?
Uh-huh.
These are yours, but only if you run and tell everyone to bring whatever food and cooking fuel they have to Hawa Saeed's stall, okay? Tell them Padma Maida's throwing a party and that it's not a joke. I handed them the bars, and they snatched them as fast as they could. They stuffed the bars in their mouths and ran away. Full tilt boogie.